Thank you for staying with KHSU on your Tuesday, August 16th, 2016. I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves. On today's program, my guest is Zuzka Sabata, and she is touring her one-woman show, A Work in Progress, titled The Secret Life of Sponsa, and she's taking it across Humboldt County. She's calling this tour a Humboldt Talkback Tour, inviting audience response as she continues to develop this work. The Secret Life of Sponsa will open this Thursday, August 18th at 8 p.m. at Arcata Playhouse. The play is a look at a part of the life of Olive Oatman, a woman who lived more than a century ago, but one known by some historically as the first tattooed white woman in America. Olive entered Zuzka's life through a book that she purchased titled The Blue Tattoo, The Life of Olive Oatman, written by Margot Mifflin. But there are a lot of different sources that attempt to summarize Olive Oatman's life. Her experience I'm going to summarize, but I want you to expand on this, particularly in the case of some quote-unquote facts that might not necessarily be facts, but in short, in 1850, a 14-year-old girl from a Mormon family, Olive Oatman, was kidnapped in the Arizona Territory by a general term for the tribe would be Apaches, but that is not the case.
That's not actually accurate. Yeah.
It was possibly by the...
It could have been the Western Yavapai. There was another, there were several smaller groups that were in that area that had, probably their territories were related to each other. They sort of covered each other a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So there was the Western Yavapai, there was the Tolkapaya, and the Havapai, I believe, if I remember correctly.
They captured and enslaved her and her sister who did not survive.
True.
And then later, were they both, or was it following her sister?
Both of them
were sold or bartered, given from one tribe to the next. And the tribe they were given to was the Mojave.
Mm-hmm.
She lived for 5 years with the Mojave before she returned to quote-unquote white society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In its entirety, she lived with two different Indian tribes for 5 years altogether. The first year was with the people who killed her family, who could have been Western Yavapai at the time. White people just called them Apaches. Everything was thrown into one pot. And then she spent 4 years with the Mojave. Mm-hmm.
Now, the book that you read was called The Blue Tattoo, and that is for the reason that they did mark her. They put marks on her face, ceremonial marks, or marks to show the designation of the tribe.
So when Olive lived with the Mojave, she received a facial tattoo, actually, so her little sister, who was there with her as well, probably also got a tattoo, but there's no record of it, so we don't know. Because her little sister, there was a really bad famine year, and her little sister ended up not surviving that. But Olive received a facial tattoo, and for the Mojave, pretty much everybody at one point received a tattoo because it marked people as a part of the Mojave tribe, so that when they died in the afterlife, they would know each other. And in particular, I remember just rereading this again in the book. If somebody was having trouble tracing themselves to their ancestors within the tribe, if for some reason, there had been deaths or they couldn't, recall who their grandparents or great grandparents were, the tattoo also served to help connect them to their ancestors so they would recognize each other in the afterlife.
Was she released? How did she return to her own society.
The resolution of her time with the Mojave Indians, and this is, you know, great background information. I will say not all of this is in the play because her story is so complex. I couldn't fit it in. Her family was killed, and then her and her sister were taken into captivity. What she didn't know was that actually her older brother survived the massacre and somehow, you know, made it across hundreds of miles of desert, or perhaps it wasn't hundreds, but quite far, to a fort. And he spent the next 5 years looking for her within his means. So it took him that long to track her down. So eventually it was determined that she was living with the Mojave, and he asked the people at the fort to help him get her back. So essentially a message was sent to the tribe that they wanted to repatriate her. And initially the tribe didn't want to give her up. And from the information that Ms. Mifflin, the author of The Blue Tattoo, gives, it's quite possible that she didn't want to leave the tribe at that point in her life. But in the end, it was decided to avoid, my guess, a larger conflict. They ended up giving her up and allowing her to go back to the fort, back to white society. What's interesting is that the time that she lived with the Mojave was literally the tribes in that area were on the brink of, you know, a permanent change because of the wave of white civilization advancing on the western part of North America at that point. So it was a time of a lot of change, a lot of conflict.
Two things. One, you're doing this alone.
Yes.
This is a one-woman show.
All by myself.
And secondly, as you were saying, there's so much material, you can't possibly have included it all. So, as the one woman performing this, where are you in her life? Are you during her capture or after or following her release or both?
I decided to focus the material of the play on her experience of living with the Indians and how she ended up communicating that to white society, because another aspect of her story that's really fascinating to me as a performer is that after she returned to white society and after maybe a year or two of reintegration, she ended up making a living on a tour circuit for 10 years talking about her experience living with the Mojave. And so she was really quite a public figure at the time, due to the fact that she also had a facial tattoo, which even today is an unusual thing to see on anybody, and especially a woman. She was quite a sensation and was really sought after in that sense. People were very curious about her experience. So the play actually is structured around that construct of her giving a public lecture or seminar about her family being killed and her being brought into captivity and living with the Indians. And what I was really interested in doing was moving beyond what would have been acceptable for her to talk about at the time into what is possibly a more true experience for her. And the thing that is very fascinating to me is that many aspects of her story are still taboo or uncomfortable for white society to talk about today, 150 years later, or a little more than that.
Would that be, the title of your play is The Secret Life of Sponsa. And according to this source, it was a review of this book by Margot Mifflin, The Blue Tattoo. It is said the Indians named her Sponsa, a rather salacious Mojave word having to do with unquenchable lust. You titled your play The Secret Life of Sponsa. Why did you do that?
It's such a great question. I actually had somebody ask me that earlier today, and I realized that I hadn't really thought about it. It just sort of happened in that way. Just to touch on, without giving anything away, just to touch on the name she was given, it was actually a nickname. So it wasn't like an official name. It was sort of like a fond name. And it is true that in a European American, I don't even know how to say this, in our cultural context today, the meaning of her name is inappropriate. I'll say that again without giving anything away. But in the Mojave context, it was totally normal and appropriate, and even something, a fond way of referring to her. I'm really interested in her inner life. Her inner world is experiencing that, and the fact that she probably, most likely, wasn't able to honestly express her true experience living among the Indians, because again, culturally speaking, there were so many aspects of Mojave culture and Indian culture in general, as we know, that were completely unacceptable to a Christian white society. And her name is emblematic of that in a lot of ways. So it represents both what I've come to think of as her true self in the experiences she had, and how her true experience separated her from the society she returned to and made her forever, just like her tattoo, different.
Zuzka Sabata, who is touring her one-woman play, The Secret Life of Sponsa, with an opening performance this Thursday at 8 p.m. at Arcata Playhouse. You are listening to Art Waves. I'm Wendy Butler. I'd like to know, do you have any other characters in this? Or is this something you don't want to give away?
You know, I when I was writing it, I didn't want to switch between characters. I wanted to continuously stay within that person. Part of the reason was that I was more interested in developing the written material than I was in figuring out how to do costume changes. But what has ended up happening in the evolution of it is that she takes on different characters in the story in order to communicate, you know, some of the things that happened to her. So there are certainly moments, for example, where her Mojave mother speaks to her, or, you know, there's something that happens with her Mojave mom, and a couple of other characters that come up. And actually, the play does open with an introduction by an anomalous character, in a sense, a kind of barker.
Which is, you also are performing that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just me on that stage for this. Me and some props.
You could have collaborated with one or two others, had you chosen?
Yes, I would have loved to in many ways. It's interesting, you know, when I read the book, which was about 5 years ago, I thought to myself, okay, if I ever want to do a one-person play, this will be my subject. I've found currently in sort of my life situation with work and all of that, that it's been too logistically challenging to figure out how to make schedules meet. And I've been lately so hungry to create material that I just allowed my impatience to get the better of me. And I said, okay, that's it. I'm just going to go ahead and write this one person play. The other side of that is that in being able to go places with it, touring, performing, it's a lot easier to make a schedule with just myself than other folks. So it was actually a lot of practical decision making.
Is this the first time that you have performed anything like this?
Yes.
First time you've done a one-woman piece?
It's the first time I've ever created and performed a close to full-length one-person piece. Yeah. Uh-huh.
You don't have a director, but there are one or two
yes,
persons that you would like to mention.
Absolutely, yeah. When I was developing the material a little over a year ago, I was preparing it to show at Del Arte's Mad Lab, which was great, an initial opportunity to be able to, get an audience. Lauren Wilson, who's the school director at Del Arte, a colleague of mine and a fantastic playwright, gave me some great direction in terms of helping to structure my script. So that was really helpful. And then this spring I had the opportunity to go to Oregon and meet with a former teacher and a mentor of mine, Bruce Mars, who's also a locally well-known mask maker and teacher and tango dancer. And so I had the chance to work with him more directorially in the spring in Bend, Oregon, and push the material forward again. So that was really great and very helpful.
In this book, The Blue Tattoo, or in any of your other resources, are there writings by her, in her voice, in Olive's voice?
Yes.
Did you choose to use any of those?
You know, Miss Mifflin quotes her in her book at times, and The Blue Tattoo is the second biography written about Olive Oatman. So, as I mentioned before, Olive went on a tour circuit, and part of that was sparked by the fact that a reverend who got to know her decided that he would interview her and her brother extensively and write down an account of their experience. At the time, these so-called captivity narratives were really, really popular and sold really well in Victorian society. And so there was a biography written by this reverend about her experience.
From this, did you pull any direct quotes from Olive?
Thank you. And so the reverend interviewed Olive extensively, and it seems that large portions of the book are in her voice, but it's hard to tell because also large portions are totally made up by him, or somehow embellished by him. And Ms. Mifflin actually did a really interesting job of trying to figure out what is her true voice in that original biography and what isn't. There is also in some archives Olive's journal. So she did keep a journal before she went into captivity, and I believe afterwards as well. I don't have access to that, or maybe in the future I might have the good fortune of figuring out how to have access to those archives, but I know that Ms. Mifflin did draw on those sources for her book.
Well, in the interview, in hearing, or looking at the words that that supposedly were uttered by Olive, what is your impression of Olive?
That's really interesting. I think that part of her mystique was that she was a bit impenetrable to people at the time. And in writing the play, I made a conscious decision that this wasn't a historical reenactment, but that I was going to generate all of the written material. So my thoughts about her coming out of having lived for 4 years with the Mojave tribe and coming back to white culture, having experienced intense trauma, was that she was a person that in many ways was shut down, not having the opportunity, the space and culture to actually really process what had happened to her. There are photos of her soon after she came back to white society. In some of the first photos of her after she came back to white society, there's this sense of almost a belligerent self-protection. There's one that I'm thinking of in particular. And then a few years later, she was quite beautiful, very compelling in her looks. In some later photos, there's another kind of gentleness that sort of exists around her. But in a sense, the experience of writing the material and then playing her on stage has been, for me, connecting to an unknown. And she is somebody who we will never be able to know because her experience is lost to the past.
The Secret Life of Sponsa. That's the title of my guest Zuzka Sabata's one-woman play, opening this Thursday night at Arcata Playhouse. The play will tour to a number of different places through the end of the month. I'm Wendy Butler, and you're listening to Art Waves on KHSU. When you think about how there is so much violence in regard to how she was taken, and perhaps even through her time with the Mojave, mm-hmm. how are you seeking to explore this, explore two cultures that are at polar opposites, or the melding of two cultures somehow?
I'm really glad you're asking me about that, because as you mentioned, her experience was an experience of horrific violence. That meeting with the people who killed her family and the tribe that she was enslaved to, and by the same token, our colonial history is one of extreme violence, and tribal peoples experienced horrific things across the United States, as well as locally. So for me, the subject matter became a doorway into talking about that conflict and violence and experience, and reminding myself that that violence in some way has not been dealt with, in many ways has not been dealt with by our society. Just like her coming back from her experiences was then subsumed by a Victorian society that would not, could not hear or understand what she experienced. And because it started with the tragedy of her family being killed, and I don't know if this information is conclusive, but most likely the motive for her family being killed was that the tribe was experiencing a severe food shortage, and her family was traveling with a lot of food and oxen. One of the oxen, the men who killed her family immediately slaughtered an oxen and ate after they killed the family. So that's probably what the situation was at the time, as well as it being a time period where in that area of America, you know, we'd already had massive clashes and murders, you know, throughout America, and the policy of the American government was extermination and eradication of tribal peoples in America, in North America. So these are all subject matters that are still very sensitive and vulnerable for everybody. And her experience is a way for me to talk about things that I think are still hushed over a lot of times, are difficult to talk about because they're painful.
Things such as, say, her story, mm-hmm. a story that she went through, because hers probably was not the only
Sure. Oh, story. There were numerous captivity stories. Yeah. So as well as on the opposite end of the spectrum, you know, tribal people, Indians coming into white society, and then how that shift happened and how they were treated, right? And that's the similarity, is the people on both the tribal side of the equation and the white side, or European American or migrant side of the equation, once those boundaries begin to be crossed and people had the experience of both sides, there's this incredible cultural conflict, right? The differences between the cultures is so massive, as you mentioned, they're like opposite ends of a spectrum, that it seems as if conflict was the only thing that could happen. It's not possible for people to understand each other. And I feel in a lot of ways that is still true today, you know.
And so since this is her story, I'm thinking that there's only so much that she can say, because it's mm-hmm. her perspective. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's not going to be the Mojave tribe perspective,
right?
Or the other tribes, that mm-hmm. other tribe's perspective.
It is certainly her reaction to those differing cultures.
So I'm thinking that in your piece, you're probably going to look at the violence of the Native American tribe, but also the violence of her own culture,
sure.
or the lack, the disconnect mm-hmm. from her. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm visualizing.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You're talking about sort of the idea that she came back into white culture, but if she didn't sort of package her experience in a certain way, she would have been absolutely ostracized and rejected by her culture. And this is a woman who saw her family murdered and then subsequently was adopted by a new family and then taken away again. from, you know, her support system. So she probably had to make some very difficult personal decisions in terms of how she would move forward in her life. And that's actually the thing that initially really captivated me about her story, was the idea that she had to undergo a kind of self-betrayal in order to survive.
Let's end this for the last couple of minutes with talking about the tour itself.
Great.
And you are calling it a talkback tour.
Yep.
So it's a work in progress.
Absolutely.
And you're welcoming feedback. Like, you're okay, so you're going to be at the Arcata Playhouse on Thursday the 18th, on Friday the 19th, Synapsis in Eureka, and then on Saturday the 20th, West Haven Center for the Arts in Trinidad. On Friday the 26th, The Sanctuary, 13th and J in Arcata, which I've never been to.
They're great.
And then Saturday the 27th, you're going to Mentol Valley Community Center in Petrolia, and Sunday the 28th, Beginnings in Bryceland. And I know Lara Munoz is going with you that second weekend I mentioned, performances the 26th through the 28th. But she is not going to be performing with you. She's going to be performing a new work of her own.
Yes.
And it is titled Unqualified Desire. It says, Unqualified Desire, a woman, a giant bag, the empty space.
Right. Yes.
But let's talk for a couple of minutes about Talk Back Tour. Now, you know, people, you're inviting people to respond. Well, the responses could be a myriad of things.
Oh, yes.
Why do you want this?
Well, first of all, in terms of a process of creating new material, the ultimate arbiter of whether or not I'm expressing what I want to be expressing is the audience. So my initial impetus for touring around Humboldt County and then having a talkback session after the show was to, because it's a one-person show, I really want to get the perspective of other people on the material to help me fill it out, to see how the material strikes people, to see how they're affected. So there's just that side of when you're developing new material in a theatrical context, your audience partners you in that process in a lot of ways by, you know, creating meaning.
Zuzka Sabata. Her play is titled The Secret Life of Sponsa. And this is a Humboldt Talkback Tour. All shows are at 8 p.m. And the opening performance is this Thursday, August 18th, at Arcata Playhouse. For more information about the other performances, you can visit zuzkasabata.wix.com/zuzka, or you can phone 834-0357. Thank you for listening. Art Waves, a production of KHSU at Humboldt State University. I'm Wendy Butler, producer, engineer, and host. And I invite you to listen to the program every Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. Or you can listen to live or archived broadcasts on our website at khsu.org.